This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As co-host of All Things Considered, Robert Siegel brings the evening news to millions of NPR listeners. He's just the guy you want to get your news from. He knows everything, or at least seems to. He's always fair, never a sucker, and he's funny, too. He's unshakable, whether he's live on the air as a war breaks out or conducting an interview on the mating habits of elephants. Siegel helped shape NPR's news operation. Since joining NPR in 1976 as an associate producer, he's been an editor, the network's first London bureau chief, and news director. As a host of All Things Considered, he's reported from hotspots around the world. He's also interviewed many authors on book tours. Now, he's an author on book tour. He's edited a new book called The NPR Interviews 1994, collecting the best interviews from last year. Last week, I spoke with Robert Siegel before an audience of WHYY listeners in Philadelphia. We have an excerpt of that interview for you. Take us behind the scenes at an editorial meeting. What are some of the typical things that you argue about at an editorial meeting? Ethical things, journalistic standards, or whether, you know, how a story should be covered, if it should be covered. Maybe you could talk about a recent meeting when there was a lot of disagreement over a story.
That's a little bit since those disagreements can be pretty intense. I'm trying to edit in my mind very rapidly which ones are for public consumption. The first typical question is: Should we cover anything? Should we cover the story at all? Is it worth our paying attention to it? The hardest kind of story for us to deal with in that sense would be, say, the O.J. Simpson trial, where there is an impulse at a place like NPR to say, let's not get in this muck. Let's stay away from this. It's a murder trial. Let's not do it. I was one of those at our meeting who said, we're reaching a dangerous point here because Totenberg and I were just talking, and we're both reading the Washington Post story start to finish about the Simpson case, and people talk about it, and everywhere we go, people are mumbling about and we haven't mentioned it on the air, and we can't reach a point where things that are very much on people's minds and that might be sorted out by a good reporter are not appearing at all on our air because we think they're not for us. Well, that's an arguable question. And then, of course, comes the next question. Should we devote every single day to the O.J. Simpson trial, which is what some outfits seem to have done? In that case, I actually came to the conclusion, having heard a lot of talk show conspiracy theories, that we owe it to people to provide some simple, straight reporting. Because if not, it simply becomes a playground for loony, paranoid theories of what the trial is about. So that's an argument.
Right, but you have a voice that I think some people would consider, a real radio voice. You have a deep voice. You have well-rounded tones. Do you know what I mean? It's
No one's ever mentioned this. No,
I
know what you mean. Yeah.
I mean, so some of us have voices that we're surprised we're on radio, and I mean, your voice was, you could say, made for radio. Did that help steer you toward radio? Did your voice have anything to do with your interest in radio?
It did, in the sense that people told me when I was entering college, you should go to the radio station. You sound like you'd sound good on the radio station, and. And then it got me past an audition to be on the radio, I guess. And that was it.
You actually had to audition, right?
That was it. That's the last thing I learned how to do in my life. but it's not... people sometimes ask me, did you do work on your voice? Or did you, I don't know what that means, actually, but I didn't, whatever it is.
I know what that means.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know what it means.
Well, what it means is, for instance, you could talk really stilted when you're reading and really need to learn how to read like you're speaking to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't done that.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to. Did your voice have... you probably wanted to go into journalism anyways, right?
Actually not. I mean, actually, I became bitten by radio.
After you went there because people told you you had a good voice?
I went there because they told me I should work at the radio station. I loved doing radio.
This was at Columbia University.
This was at Columbia College, Columbia University. And I would do newscasts, but I would be a golden oldies disc jockey, and I would announce classical music, and I just loved radio. And I was always doing news, and that was at least the activity that redeemed the other activities, made the others seem somewhat plausible that I should be wasting all this time at the radio station. And then at the end of college, I was doing news at the radio station, and the Columbia demonstrations, the big anti-war, anti-gym demonstrations they were really, of 1968 took place. And we covered them round the clock, and I anchored the coverage. And
did you sleep at the radio station overnight?
Yeah, we slept at the radio station, and I loved it. I was absolutely bitten by it. But I hadn't entered wanting to be a journalist.
I bet that was an interesting education in a way, because maybe it was different in New York, which has the New York Times and the Village Voice. Where I went to school in Buffalo, we all felt when we were students, when there were demonstrations on campus, that the press always got it wrong. Their numbers were off. Their motivation was completely distorted. Was it an education for you to witnessed what happened and then read what the press had to say about it?
It was a very extensive education. First was the experience of saying something on the radio, and then an hour later seeing it come over on our one ticker, a now obsolete machine from the Associated Press, and then hearing our newscasters read it as though it was now news, when after 30 seconds of analysis, this was what we had just said. It's now been disseminated by the Associated Press. The Columbia demonstrations were interesting also because first it showed me that when you live in a community, as I did in this university community, there's some things that were news and different. Like there were hundreds of students occupying buildings, and there was a threat of arrest, and they were about to be arrested by the police. And then there were things that were absolutely normal, like there were radical mime troops around the campus, or people wearing bizarre clothes, or posters. That was normal. And as the television people would arrive, they thought all that was part of the news story. they had difficulty distinguishing between what was unusual and what was everyday. And I realized that there are things you understand about a story by living in it and by being part of it, and then translating it to people. You're either talking to people who are part of it or talking to other people. The big lesson for journalism was the night that I think 700 some people were arrested at Columbia, in what was to be regarded as a disastrous evening for the New York City Police Department, a loss of control, and many people were beaten. Some of them I saw being beaten. And the New York Times went to bed early and published a lead that said that hundreds of students were peaceably evicted from Columbia University's Hamilton Hall, which was actually true. But then the other events that had happened after the Times went to bed were never quite reported or made it into the very bottom graphs of later editions. And for a couple of years, I saw people who actually were pretty sensible human beings trying to say that there had been this mass indiscipline by the police, only to have the New York Times held up to them to say it didn't happen. Many young stringers for the New York Times and even young staff reporters threatened to quit over the over the coverage of that event. But I remember David Suss. Remember David Susskind?
Of course.
I remember David Susskind's show where someone was trying to explain that there had been police brutality at Columbia, and he held up the New York Times, and there it was. And the power of the press of record, people who established the official version of events, to form people's opinions or to help them rationalize their opinions is enormous, and it made a deep impression on me.
Did you go to journalism school, or did you learn on the job by doing?
I went to the job, then I came back to journalism school, and
is that helpful?
Notorious dropout from the Graduate School of Journalism.
Not that helpful.
Well, it's helpful in some way. I met a wonderful man who was a mentor to me, the late John Patterson, who had been a great radio editor at CBS for many years, and a man who actually had lost his legs in the war in a troop train accident, and was a marvelous stoic Virginian from the Shenandoah Valley who could move enormous newsroom tables with one hand and a cane. But I also found it not what I'd become accustomed to in the way of university education. I thought it was a lot of it was awfully anecdotal, and I also just wasn't much of a student.
We're featuring an interview with Robert Siegel, recorded last week before an audience of WHYY listeners in Philadelphia. Siegel is the editor of the new book, The NPR Interviews, 1994. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Last week, I spoke with Robert Siegel, co-host of All Things Considered, before an audience of WHYY listeners in Philadelphia. One of the listeners asked Robert this question: if he could interview any public figure today, who would it be and why?
Instantly, when you say public figure, I think about which leading politician I might want to interview. And those are so often the hardest and worst interviews that we do, that they're, I find them not attractive events. Most politicians I find are off on their own answers, and they have their agenda, and it doesn't matter what I say to them or what Linda or Noah says to them, they'll give the... Was I just saying... I can't remember what I've said and what place now, but was I saying this
book-a-ritis
to Marty? It is book... Marty Moskowitz. Did I mention Linda Wertheimer's proposal the other day after each of us had recently done a prominent public figure who would have given the same answers if we had, regardless of what we'd said. And she said, I think in the future, Rob, I think we ought to ask these people, we should just say, have you seen the new exhibit at the East Wing of the National Gallery? Because just the same, they're going to say, the president has heard the message of the electorate. And then we should just come back and say, and what about the Redskins? Do you think they have a chance of doing that? And they'll still say, he's a man of the center. He began as a man of the center. So there are some interviews where, to be realistic about this, we're just not... We're furniture, frankly, in some of these interviews, and it's not a great ambition. Public figures. There are some writers. This year I got to interview V.S. Naipaul, the novelist, who may not mean much to a lot of people, but it was a big experience for me to talk to him. And it was in the sense of talking to a star. It ranked right up there with interviewing Stan Musial the other day this year. For me, the somewhat talented harmonica playing Hall of Fame baseball player, those to me are more satisfying interviews. And I guess if I could get an interview with the Pope, I would find that pretty interesting. In particular, having done some reporting from his hometown, and having been aware of. What I think is one of the central roles of the past 15 years of history that we've experienced that he's played.
Robert Siegel, co-host of All Things Considered, recorded at the WHYY studios. The event was produced by Art Ellis. Audrey Bentham was the recording engineer. Robert Siegel has edited a new book called The NPR Interviews, 1994. This is Fresh Air.